This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. NHL Season Preview Spectacular. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us on the program will be Sheriff Shane Knighty. You know him here as part of the broadcast crew on TSN 1290 and TSN Jets. Kevin Allen from USA Today will join us to preview the Eastern Conference. And Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail will join us to preview the Western Conference. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website featuring the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Before we get started talking about your Winnipeg Jets, I say good afternoon to my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you both?
Doing good. Good afternoon. Are you ready to make it rain today?
Well, it's raining already outside, so I don't really have to do anything about that part.
But I want to know if you're ready to make it rain.
I'm always ready. I always bring my A game. I always make it rain like Floyd Mayweather.
Because I know Richie's ready to make it rain.
Yeah, let's go
Richie
here.
Richie always brings it.
Season preview show. Let's go. Don't want to waste
no time for any chit-chat today. Straight into it. Winnipeg Jets wrapped up their exhibition season last night with a pretty poor showing, but it's exhibition, so we're not going to talk too much about it. We're not going to read too much into what happened last night in Saskatoon. I ask you guys this question. I start with this question for you guys. The Jets have 26 men in camp. They have to get down to 23. Who is not going to make this team that is currently with the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, Richie, it depends if they want to go with eight defensemen, right, or 14 forwards. Pardon me, if they want to go with 13 forwards, let me see if I can get that right.
Let's try the simple math again.
13 forwards and 8 defensemen and 2 goalies, because, of course, the magic number is 23. Or if they want to go with 7 defensemen and 14 forwards. It's a combination of 21 with the forwards and defensemen, right? So I tend to think that because Postma and Party are on one-way contracts, they're going to go with 8 defensemen. Yep. So I would have to think that Zach Redmond is going back to St. John's. And one of Anthony Peluso or Eric Tangrady probably won't make the opening roster. Now, the problem is that both of those guys have one-way contracts. And Cormier is the other guy that's going back to St. John's. But I think right now it's between, you could argue Thorburn too, but I happen to believe that Thorburn isn't in that situation. But really, to me, that's who your extra forwards are going to be, Thorburn or Peluso or Tangrady, and then the defenseman. I happen to think also that as far as the way Party and Postma have played, Party's probably got the edge a little bit there, but those are going to be the extra defensemen. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it makes no difference in this team, because if they're making the playoffs, these guys are not going to be big factors. So whoever makes it right today could change by one injury. You don't know if some guy gets injured the next couple of days, goes in IR, and the guy ends up staying on the roster. You don't know. Small injuries like that seem to happen around roster time. So at the end of the day, if you're dealing with Party, you're dealing with Postma, you're dealing with Tangrady and Peluso, if any of those guys are playing significant minutes for this team's done. So let's talk about the guys who matter.
Okay, the guys who matter.
Not that those guys don't matter. Let's talk about the guys who are going to be the difference makers of this team making the playoffs or not.
Okay, then let me ask. You just set me up for that question. Who's the guy? If you had to pick one guy on this roster, who is the difference maker on this team for being a playoff-bound team versus missing the playoffs for a third consecutive year?
I think the difference maker is Andrei Pavlik, but I think that's contingent upon how the team plays in front of him. So it's kind of a two-pronged answer there, Drew. Pavlik needs to be better. If there's any question about that, the team needs to play better defense. I don't think there's any question about that.
Do you think, I mean, we've heard a lot of lip service about this team having a better commitment to defense, and this is going to be the year that they really cut down on the goals against and the shots that are put on to Andrei Pavlik. Do you buy it? Do you see a more committed team to the defensive side of the game, or do you think it's just something that they're talking about right now?
Before Ezzy gets in here, you don't know until you see in the regular season, so it's really hard for us to say. I mean, Trouba's an upgrade on the back end over what they had, I think. But overall, you know, Frolik in there, and you had Setoguchi. But overall, I don't think there's anything to lead me to believe that they've locked it down defensively. So I would say no right now.
as Richie mentioned, only time will tell over the first few weeks, over the first few months, really over the course of the season, if the Jets have improved defensively and as a group if they have committed to buy in defensively. There's no doubt in my mind that Claude Noel, Charlie Huddy, Pascal Vincent, Perry Pern, the entire coaching staff want the team to play better defensively. There's no doubt in my mind because the Jets at times were very porous defensively last year, and at times they were better. And, you know, Richie mentioned the fact that Jacob Trouba will be in the top six, and essentially it's the same group with the exception of Ron Hainsey leaving. Now Grant Clitson gets elevated to the left side on the second pair. But I think there are so many factors, and, you know, it starts in that Andre Pavlik played more minutes than anybody during the lockout year, and he has to be better, and he most likely will have to play less in order for him to be more effective. He likes to play a lot, but I don't know if playing him 70 games is the best idea, because it's hard in the NHL to play 70 games. Not everybody can be Martin Brodeur, right? So I tend to think that on forward, there have been improvements, as Richie mentioned as well. I mean, Michael Frolik, great penalty killer, great responsible defensive forward. You've got James Wright, you've got Jim Slater, guys that are defensively responsible. It's guys like Olli Jokinen, Evander Kane. Are they going to show more of a defensive awareness? I happen to think the Jets will be better defensively, but for me, it's a question of how much better defensively, because they have to be a lot better defensively, and that's the most important thing in determining if they're going to make the playoffs, because they're going to get goals. Evander Kane's going to get goals. The Lad Little Wheeler line's going to get goals. I think Setoguchi will come in and add some secondary offense. But they're going to have to get better defensively, and that's night in, night out. You know, Drew, you hear consistency all the time, right? And you ask players and you ask coaches about consistency, but it's true. From game to game last year, and I mean, you guys can disagree if you want, but I felt like from game to game, we saw different teams and different effort levels and different battle levels and stuff like that. So I think it really is important for this team, because I think there's enough talent on this team for this team to make the playoffs. I really do.
Straight talent-wise, I agree with that. But there's not enough. In terms of consistency, I think you mean being tough to play against, too. That's a factor. You play against certain teams, they're hard to play against. The Jets are not hard to play against. They're not physical. They're lackadaisical defensively. They get caught up in the game a lot and the emotion of the game in terms of the flow and how you want to play. They don't dictate the style. The style is dictated for them. All those things make the Jets an easy team to play against.
And I think going out and getting someone like Michael Frolik is really important. I think we'd all agree the penalty kill is going to be better. But Michael Frolik is one player. Just one player.
Right.
One player isn't going to change the entire team. I mean, when you're talking about other teams in the division, Chicago, Nashville, St. Louis, these are teams that are just stacked on defense and they're extremely difficult to play against. Or Boston, who they just lost to. I mean, Boston makes it hard to cross their blue line. And there are certain guys on the Jets that make it hard to cross the blue line, but it's got to be a group effort. It's got to be across the board. The commitment's got to be there. I'm optimistic, and I think the Jets will be better defensively. It's just a question of if that consistency's there, 82 games.
Moving away from the defensive side, you look at Lad Little Wheeler. They're obviously, at least last year, they were the engine that made this team go. When that line was clicking, the Jets were clicking. In a full season, after last year's abbreviated season, can you see that line producing at the same level that they did last year?
That'd be hard, Drew. I mean, Little is limited offensively. Lad, to have a season like that, I would be surprised. But he has done it now, so I wouldn't be shocked. He shocked me last year. He would surprise me this year if he kept up that pace, but he wouldn't shock me. Wheeler, for the most part, has proven that he can be that offensive guy who can put up pretty solid offensive totals. So I would be surprised if they performed at the level of last – slightly surprised if they performed at the level of last year, but I wouldn't be floored.
Richie, that second line has got to produce for the Jets this year, and that's why, you know, for Mark Scheifele's first year, it's so important. We've talked about it, you know, previewing the season before. But, you know, Devin Setoguchi's got to contribute. Kane's got to still be at that 30-goal, 60-point level. And their power play has to be better. I think Richard's right. I don't think you can expect, you know, career seasons every year. Andrew Ladd was the MVP of the team last year. It's you know, it's obvious. And he'll be – there's no reason to believe why he won't be good again last year. But you got to have more balanced scoring. They relied too much on that line last year. And, you know, that's why I'm hopeful that Mark Scheifele will be a little bit more productive than Olli Jokinen at center. The question is, how productive is he? Is he going to have long scoring slumps? Or is he going to be able to have a breakthrough NHL season? But they've got to get more points from other sources. And Frolik might help on the third line, but they've got to get more goals. Olli Jokinen, whether he's on the third line or second line, he's got to produce more. He wasn't brought in to be a checker. He was brought in to give them some secondary offense.
The problem also with Scheifele is, you know, you talk about team defense. Young players struggle defensively. And Scheifele is not an exception to that rule. And that's going to be an issue. He's a center. There's a lot of responsibility for a center playing defensively in the National Hockey League. There's a lot of responsibility for a center playing defensively in any league. And if he's going to be that second-line guy, you're playing in the Western Conference. So you're playing against big-time talent. Not that you weren't in the Eastern Conference necessarily, but you know, you're going up against Ryan Kessler. That's your second-line center in Vancouver. That's who you're matching up against, theoretically. So you have to be good, and you have to be strong defensively.
And, Richie, the Ladd Little Wheeler line is a bona fide number one line. I mean, this is the number one line of the team. You pencil it in, you know it's going to be the number one line.
Well, Little's not a number one center, is he? I mean,
right, but I'm just saying, for this team, that's the number one line, right? And they're not going to score every single game. So you know, when you're on a 3 or 4 game road trip and those guys are struggling a little bit, who's going to pick up the slack? And if it's not Evander Kane, it's got to be someone else. It's got to be Jokinen. It's got to be Frolik. Mm-hmm. And last year, I think they've addressed it. I think they've improved their forward group this year.
They have. I mean, they improve it by getting rid of Antropov, Wellwood, all those guys who provided nothing. And then they get guys in who are NHL players.
Right.
I agree. I like Hallstrick. I haven't seen much of the preseason, admittedly. I like what he does in the PK, though. Gets in the lanes. Active stick. You know, they call the active stick. But he sees where the puck's going, and he gets in the way of it. And I like that.
Hallstrick is a great energy player. And that's why I believe a guy like Tangrady has been squeezed out a little bit on the left wing there. And Hallstrick can also play right wing. But I think Hallstrick, even though he's on a two-way deal, I think he's earned his spot on the Jets because of, like you said, the way he can play on the power play. Pardon me, penalty kill. And he's just an energy guy who goes around, hits people, and makes it difficult to play against. So, but yeah, Drew, I mean, the Ladd Little Wheeler line, they're going to be counted on again. I mean, they're going to get thrown out there, and they're going to play on the power play. But the season is going to depend on how much better they improve defensively and if they can improve that secondary scoring.
And you also talk about the centers. You know, can Jokinen perform? Can Scheifele perform? And Little, I mean, there's only so much ice time to go around. So you can't give Jokinen 10 minutes a game and expect 25 goals if you're asking for a big year from Jokinen. And you can't give Scheifele 10 minutes a game and expect 25. The idea is, you know, there's only so many minutes in a game. So you got to apportion it and then have your expectations in line with that, how the time is apportioned.
Well, and you have to hope that given how you portion it out, you hope that they also perform to that level. Last year, Jokinen got a ton of ice time and just didn't perform to that
Absolutely.
Level. And I mean, you can certainly draw a parallel between time on ice and performance. And if performance is not at that level, then that's, you know, is a good example why if this team is going to be successful or not. Let's go to break. When we come back, Shane Knighty from the TSN Jets broadcast crew is going to join us to talk some more about your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. The conversation continues on Twitter. You better follow us there, at Illegal Curve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him as the Sheriff, Shane Knighty. Shane, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good day, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing very well. It's a little bit rainy here in the Peg. What's it like up there in Alberta?
Well, it's a little bit overcast, but the sun is peeking its eye out, and it's actually beautiful here in the mountain backdrop with the Banff Springs Golf Course staring at me and calling me.
Slightly nicer than the ambiance that we have here in the studio, believe it or not. Shane, obviously we have you on to preview the Winnipeg Jets with the season starting on Tuesday there in Edmonton. You know, in the previous segment we were saying that a lot of the Jets' hopes relies on the Ladd Little Wheeler line repeating the success they had during last year's abbreviated season. Do you think that that trio can match what they did last year?
Well, I think they have to. this team wants to get to playoffs, and I think they recognize that. I think the three of them know what's expected of them. They know how big their roles and what a key part they are to this team. Will they match it? You know, I would certainly think so. You know, they've proven it now through, you know, I guess a year and a half or whatever we've been able to watch them, that, you know, those are the go-to guys. But at the same time, I think they need to have that secondary scoring, and that's going to have to come from other guys outside Evander Kane.
Shane, you know, with Olli Okunen and Evander Kane really not having a lot of chemistry last year, do you think Mark Scheifele kind of needs to be the second-line center on this team for this team to make the playoffs?
Well, isn't that the biggest question of the preseason? You know what? Right now, no, I don't think so. And the reason why is I don't know if Mark Scheifele's ready to be the number two center, because, yes, offensively it's great, but is Mark Scheifele ready to be the number two center when you're down in Anaheim and he's up against Ryan Getzlaff, or you're in L.A. and he's against Anze Kopitar, or you're in San Jose, he's against Joe Thornton, or you're in Minnesota, he's against Mikko Koivu? We're talking about guys all 6'3 and up and 220 pounds. You know, that's tough. That's, you know, more of a veteran role to play. I think Mark Scheifele can roll into there. But to initially put him in that position is a big, I guess it's a big task to ask of a young man. So they're going to wait and see how this goes. And, you know, I know everyone's on Olli Okunen. And, you know, I'm going to, I guess, take the player view of this and say, you know, it's preseason. I'll start judging once, you know, we start here regular season. But, you know, I think he recognizes that he needs to come out of the gate ready in the regular season. Preseason didn't go well for him. It didn't go well for the majority of the Winnipeg Jets. But that being said, a win in Winnipeg, a lot of people forget the preseason pretty quickly.
That's right. Yeah.
Shane, the special teams were a sore spot for the Jets last year. The power play was the worst in the NHL. The penalty kill was ranked 24th in the NHL. Kevin Cheveldayoff went out and acquired Michael Frolik from the Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks, and also acquired signed Matt Halaschuk, who was on the Predators last year. Do you think the addition of those two players has really significantly improved the chances for the penalty kill to improve this year?
Well, I think it has. Well, it's been fantastic. That's been the, you know, I guess the one real bright spot from the preseason is the penalty kill. You know, they shut out the Bruins two games in a row. I can't remember what they ended up, but they only allowed two power play goals the whole preseason. That was early on, so they're, you know, in the mid 90% average. But yeah, I think Frolik helps. Halaschuk, I also think a healthy Jim Slater. You know, he was injured last year. That hurt. I think James Wright's a really good penalty killer. And I think they've got guys that really buy in. You know, Truba stepped in and done a good job, him and Mark Stewart. Stewart, we know, is a penalty killer. But they've got a good cast of characters killing the penalties and guys that are doing a great job. And I think it's those guys playing together on the penalty kill. When you watch them, the hardest thing on a unit is, number one, you got to outwork the power play. Number two, you have to be in sync. Because if one guy forces, the other two have to be, or two or three have to be on the same page, knowing their assignments. And we're starting to see that. So the penalty kill looks good. I think they've acquired a couple people that can help there. Plus, they got some health back there with you know, Jim Slater. He's big on draws and big with the man down.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Sheriff Shane Knighty of the TSN Jets TSN 1290 broadcast team. Shane, you mentioned buy-in. This team has given a lot of lip service to them having to buy in to improve team defense. Do you think that this will really translate, you know, during the regular season, or do you think, as I mentioned, it is just lip service and you're going to see a similar, not terrific team defense mentality?
Well, I think they recognize they need to be better defensively. And when you talk about team defense, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, you have to acquire certain knowledge and certain things. Is it lip service? I don't think so. I think the guys genuinely want to be better, but it's one thing to talk about it, one thing to go out and do it. But I think they're still in that learning curve area of about learning assignments in their own end and how to play and how to be tough to defend against. I think Claude Nell talked about it last night. Just felt they're out-battled in the territory, the biggest territory being the front of the net, whether it's your own end or their end, and you've got to win those battles and be willing to battle hard, because, you know, most of the time that's where a lot of the goals are scored or given up, is right on top of the blue paint there between the hash marks and the goal. So team defense is going to happen, but right away, but they have to build on it. It becomes a system, and yes, there has to be a buy-in from players. They have to recognize whatever your role is, you all have to play and have a job to do defensively, and when you all do it as a unit, you'll start to see the positives come from it.
Shane, you know, we talk about team defense. I guess this kind of gets tied to with the next question, and that's Andre Pavlik. What does he need to do to kind of take his game to the next level? Because there's been a couple of years here where he's kind of been middling, and he's had some great games, some poor games, but overall he hasn't really performed, I think, at the level that some people expected when he signed his contract. What does he need to do, and how much does that, how much of that relates to the team defense aspect?
Well, I think it goes hand in hand. I think, you know, if you have a, you look at a lot of the goalies that are usually top of the numbers, you know, look at the defense. They're usually right. Some of the best defensive teams, whether it's the Rangers with Lundqvist, the Bruins with Rask, the Quick with the King. Those are defensively solid teams. And, you know, that would only help Andre Pavlik. I think Andre Pavlik needs to have his best year. I think he'd be the first to say it. I need to go out and have my best season yet. So it needs to be a combination. For this team to go to that next step, Andre Pavlik has to take his game up. Defensively, as a team, they have to take it up too. And, you know, that's nothing new, and I'm sure if you were talking to the players, it's nothing new to them. They recognize playoffs is their goal. They need to be better in a lot of areas. And, you know, I know coming out of the preseason, it's not time for the panic button whatsoever. This is preseason. I know the record doesn't look good. There are concerns, and I think Claude Noel addressed those. Yeah, there's concerns, and they're going to work on it. They've got time now to step away, work on those areas. They're going to have some practices. They had so many numbers. They're down now. They can really concentrate on putting those numbers, that team they're going to put on the ice, work on those concerns they have, and hopefully address them, settle them, and get ready.
Shane, Claude Noel was given a one-year contract extension back in late June, and Kevin Cheveldayoff was given a contract extension just a couple of weeks ago. How much pressure do you think is on Claude Noel this year to get this team into the playoffs?
Well, I think there's pressure every year. I don't think contract status really has a lot to do with it. You know, I think he's a coach who's been around a long time. He recognizes the situation. And you know what? Pressure is such a strange word. And I can't remember. Somebody was talking about this earlier this year, and it was a player. It was one of the top. And talked about pressure because talking about Mark Scheifele, the pressure, Trouba, the pressure, you know, GM, coach. You know, pressure comes with the territory. If you can't deal with pressure and you can't, you know, learn to work around it, you're not going to be successful. You know, look at the top players in the world, whether you're Crosby, Ovechkin, you know, whoever you want to name. Those top players have the pressure each and every game, and they find ways around it. So to get to that, I think Claude Noel's a coach who's been around. He's dealt with pressure. I'm sure he's feeling it. He recognizes it. But at the same time, he's a guy who knows how to step away, walk around it, and hopefully find the results.
Shane, just so you know, I'm able to deal with pressure. That's why that's why Remus is a producer and I'm on air.
I was going to say, that's why you lead the group?
That's right.
Let's not get carried away with Ezzy leading the group now. That might be a bridge too far.
Saturday, guys. Don't get in a fight.
Shane, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, look into your crystal ball and look at the season unfolding. You know, given what you know about this team, do you think that they end up being a playoff team at the end of, when April comes around?
Oh, here we go. I'm not one for predictions. Mm-hmm. Do I think they have what it takes to make playoffs? Yes. But that's going to be up to them. Are they? And it's going to be a long battle. I think there's some teams in my mind that are ahead of them, already locks. But I think they're one of those teams that's going to be battling for, you know, some playoff positions. So we'll have to wait and see what they can do. But they do have the tools. But it's going to be up to this group to. We've seen them in spurts play like a playoff team. It's just bringing that consistency each and every night. And if they can do that, they can put themselves in a good position.
Shane Knighty, you know him from the TSN Jets and the TSN 1290 broadcast team. Thanks very much for joining us. Are you getting onto the golf course out there at Banff Springs?
I am soon, guys. Thanks very much.
Hit it straight, Shane. Thanks very much, bud.
Bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. When we come back, USA Today's Kevin Allen.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to Sheriff Shane Knighty for having just joined us. In case you missed any of the interview, it will be available for download both on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca. A reminder, Wednesday evening, the season premiere of NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Wednesday night all season long. You get your double dose of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Season premiere of Breaking Bread.
Whatever. Hey.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend from USA Today, talking about the Eastern Conference in the NHL this season, Kevin Allen. Kevin, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Doing excellent. Ready for a new season to start. I'm excited. You know, realignment is, to me, a re-energizing situation, I think, for everyone. I think everyone's sort of intrigued by what's going to happen. And I keep saying to fans, like, this is much bigger than you think it is. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think this is going to totally confuse fans this season, because it's going to really be difficult to sort of get a sense of where your team is for, a lengthy period because of the new divisions.
It should be fun, that's for sure. And it seems like this offseason has been interminably long. So I think, like you said, everybody's ready for Tuesday night to roll around and the season to start. When you look at the Eastern Conference, you just by default have to start with last year's Eastern Conference representative in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's the Boston Bruins. In your mind, did that team get better or worse this offseason?
I think they're the same. Obviously losing Horton is significant. He was an important part of their top line, and the trading away of Sagan changes that as well. But, you know, Erickson will replace Horton's goals and maybe even be a better player. I thought he was, you know, in probably the top three or four most underrated players in the league. He's a very good player, and I think, you know, he's never really received the notoriety in Dallas, but I think he'll get it now. And I think, you know, as long as that team has Chara, as long as that team has the defense that it has, and I know they lost Ferentz, and he was an important guy in the dressing room, but this is a team that doesn't, you know, have a lot of guys who can help out in the dressing room, and I think Dougie Hamilton will step up, and, you know, he's obviously a more dynamic and can have more offensive impact than Ferentz did, and I think ultimately, although not this season, he'll probably be, better defensively even. So I like that team a lot, and I think there's every chance that they'll be pushing to try to get back exactly where they were last season.
You know, Boston Bruins walked right through the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, Kevin, in the conference finals. Heading into this year, I mean, Pittsburgh's loaded with talent. We all know that. But can the team trust Marc-Andre Fleury between the pipes?
Yeah, that's the big question. And, I've just said this to an NHL executive. The problem with the Fleury situation is this. What's twofold? One, he could go 82-0, and it won't matter. Come the start of April, right, we'll all be writing, yeah, but is he going to be any good in the playoffs? Because he's been good in the regular season. And then over the last four postseasons, and that's, to me, that's the rub. That's four consecutive postseasons. He hasn't been any good. And, we've all watched the games, and sometimes, you know, if the team isn't playing well, that sort of trickles down to the goalie, and it's really not so much the goalie as the team. But you know what? We've all watched those last two postseasons, and Fleury just was not Fleury, and he did not play well. And it's almost like, you know, Chuck Knoblauch when he couldn't throw the ball over to first base as a major league player, or a golfer who has the yips on the short putts. Like, there's really no explanation when you watch him. He just suddenly looks like he's not confident in fighting every puck, and I think that's a concern. And then the second element that makes it more complicated is, boy, is this guy popular with his teammates. And right. I think that it makes it difficult, because I think it's really easy for us to say, well, you know, Ray Sherrill better have a plan B ready to replace him. But this guy is very popular, and it would be very disruptive for them to suddenly just announce we're going to a different goalie. He's friends with Sidney Crosby, and he's friends with the other top players on the team. So it's not just a simple solution of going out and finding another goalie. They really got to hope that somehow Marc-Andre Fleury restores his confidence in the postseason.
Kevin, at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned realignment, and Detroit was trying to get into the Eastern Conference for years, and obviously, finally, they're going to be in the Eastern Conference this year. And instead of, you know, sizing Detroit up against Chicago and Nashville in the Central Division, now you're sizing them up against the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins. They went out and they acquired Daniel Alfredsson in probably the biggest splash of the offseason, and they went out and they acquired Steven Weiss, who will most likely play second-line center. Do you think that you could make the argument that they're one of the teams to beat in that division?
Yeah, that's a interesting question, and not one I've heard phrased quite like that. But I would say this. I think there is a difference in the style of play. I know some players like to say, oh, it's really not that big a deal. But I think it can be. But good is still good. And the Red Wings have been in the playoffs every year for 22 years, I think it is. And there's a reason for that. They have a high level of consistency. Babcock prepares a team as well as any coach in the league, if not better than all the other coaches in the league. And in addition to getting Alfredsson and Steven Weiss, and I think Steven Weiss is actually a more important acquisition, you know, they expect Samuelson and Bertuzzi to contribute when they really weren't big contributors, and they got their fingers crossed, but now it's looking like he's going to start on the disabled list, and Darren Helm will eventually be back as well. So, you know, the big question for the Red Wings is, and sometimes this surprises fans when I say that, because there's a misconception that the Red Wings are still a very good offensive team, but since Lidstrom is retired, they're a poor defensive team, and it's actually the other way around. Their defense by the end of last season was very good. You know, a lot of good things happened for them, including, you know, Kendall Erickson playing better than he had played the previous year, Kendall stepping up, DeKeyser showing up and solidifying the defense. Their problem is they had trouble scoring goals. Mm-hmm. And that was a problem that started early in the season and never improved. So they need Alfredsson and Weiss to score. They need, you know, Samuelson and Bertuzzi to stay healthy and provide secondary scoring. If that happens, then they're going to compete for the Stanley Cup in the Eastern Conference.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our season preview show. We're joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today talking about the Eastern Conference. Kevin, you look at the Ottawa Senators. They add Bobby Ryan in the big trade with Anaheim. They lose Daniel Alfredsson. We just mentioned he's off to Detroit. Is this the year the Senators break through to the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I'm having a difficult time on the read on Ottawa. And I guess what it comes down to for me is, if Anderson plays like the way he did last season, they're right in the mix. If he doesn't, then I think, you know, they're a bubble team for the playoffs. Like, I like where they're headed. McLean's done a good job. Murray brings in the right people. The Ryan deal, I think, helps them certainly in the short term and maybe in the long term. But, you know, I just don't know whether they've made enough advances to keep along the plane as well as they did last season. Like, I like this team, but I don't love this team unless, you know, Anderson plays, you know, just out of his mind like he did, you know, last season. So I think they'll prevent goals from being scored. The question for me is, how many goals will they get? Bobby Ryan's going to help, but, you know, they need everybody to have really strong season. So I see them as sort of right in the middle there in that 3-4-5 spot in the East, in the Atlantic Division in the East.
You know, Kevin, expectations are always a funny thing, and Montreal expectations are always high, but they probably weren't as high last year prior to the season as they are now. I think that's probably a sure thing. The Habs face off against Ottawa in the playoffs last year, and clearly the size up front was an issue. They go out, they bring in George Parros, but really in terms of big-time players, they bring in another small forward in Daniel Briere. Considering the fact that they still lack size up front, and considering the fact that there's a lot of expectations that have been heaped upon their shoulders, what do you expect from Montreal this year?
Well, I think they're right in that 3-4-5 spot with Ottawa and, you know, probably Toronto. And, you know, I think that's going to be a battle within that grouping to try to get one of those playoff spots. And, you know, it's fascinating. Like, you know, you go out and you add a guy like Parros, and I like Parros a lot. You know, Cleary is one of the top enforcers in the game. He's a great dressing room guy, very intelligent man. He's just good to have around the hockey team. But that's really not going to help them in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got other issues as well. Emelin starting out on, you know, he's not going to be ready. The defense is, you know, it's got Subban and Markov. It's still a good defense, but, you know, they need all of their pieces. And again, you know, they're going to need everybody playing very, very well. And then it's all going to come down, much like in Ottawa with Anderson, is someone tell me how good Carey Price is going to be. You know, at the end of last season, he was not sharp. And when he was not at the top of his game, you know, they looked ripe for an upset. And obviously that happened to him in the postseason. So, you know, they need Carey Price. This is a big year for him because I think he really needs to establish that he is going to be a premium goalie in this league. And if it's not this season, then I think you got to start to wonder in Montreal whether he's the long-term solution.
Kevin, moving to the Garden State, New Jersey obviously had an interesting offseason. New owner Ilya Kovalchuk decided to go back to the motherland there, and there were there was the Adam Henrique contract situation, so there was no shortage of work there for Lou Lamoriello and the Devils. Do you think it's possible that even though Ilya Kovalchuk is now in Russia, that with Damian Brunner, Ryan Clough, Jaromir Jagr, and Michael Ryder, they're actually better off than they were with Kovalchuk?
I don't, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because nobody does better patchwork than Lou Lamoriello. Like, when you look at Kovalchuk leaving, you think, oh, and so late when nobody was available. I remember thinking, mm-hmm. Oh, well, Lou, you know, you've just run out of magic here. There's just no way. Now I look at all those guys, and I love, you know, that no one's better with the dice in his hands than Lou Lamoriello. Like, he's the best at rolling the dice. And all of those guys have some sort of issue. I mean, Damian Brunner is really a one-dimensional player. You know, he can do one thing. He can score some goals, and he can be very elusive. But he's going to cost you defensively. He's going to be terrible along the boards. He's just not going to get much done. You know, Jagr, we love Jagr. Jagr's great in the dressing room. He's still got a great offensive touch, but he's 112 years old. Okay? And Ryder, we know what Ryder's about. Right, He'll get you goals, but, you know. So all those guys, I like the rolls of the dice. It was the best he could do under the circumstances. And Kovalchuk really didn't have a good year last season. So I'm saying all this, and now I'm going to tell you, you know, you can't be a better team if one of the most dangerous players in NHL history has left your team and gone elsewhere. I just think he was the scariness of the Devils. You know, he's the guy you had to talk about when you played them. And I think now they just turn into, you know, an intriguing team, but to me an ordinary team. And I think Lou did the best he could. You know, if everything went well, who knows, but I don't see them as a playoff team.
44 minutes past the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Season Preview Spectacular, talking about the Eastern Conference with Kevin Allen of USA Today.
Kevin, the Toronto Maple Leafs last year surprised a lot of people, and lots of people thought they were kind of doing it on smoke and mirrors. I have a lot of respect for Randy Carlyle, and then this offseason, Dave Nonis goes out, gets Jonathan Bernier, Dave Boland, David Clarkson, a couple of guys there that really seem like Randy Carlyle-like players. What do you see for the Toronto Maple Leafs this season?
Well, I like the Maple Leafs. I thought Clarkson had the feel to me of a missing piece acquisition. I thought he completed their top six forwards. You know, now they had at least six guys now who are all guys who are noteworthy performers that can fill in there. And I love the Bernier acquisition. You know, a lot of my colleagues said, "Hey, you know, we know all about his promise, but what has Bernier done?" Well, all I know is every time I saw him play a game, and he didn't play that many, but every time I did, he was very, very impressive. Mm-hmm. And I think one of two things are going to happen. Either he'll emerge and take the job, and the 1-2 punch of Bernier and Reimer will be very good, among the best in the league, or he'll push Reimer. Reimer will be a better goalie, and Bernier will still be a great backup, maybe the best backup in the league. You know, either way, I think their goaltending is better than it was last season, and I think you know, I think Nonis has done a real good job of replacing Burke. I'm still not sold that, Phaneuf is the right guy to be your top defenseman. I think he has a level of inconsistency that would worry me if I was the coach. But I like that team. I think they're headed in the right direction. I think they're competitive on a nightly basis. And as I previously mentioned, I think they're in that 3-4-5 range where they're going to be battling all year. But, you know, they're in the hunt.
Kevin, I'm sticking in the Metropolitan Division, even though I can't figure out why Columbus is in the Metropolitan Division because I don't think it's a thriving metropolis. But I'm going to ask a question about the New York Islanders. They made the playoffs last year for the first time in many years and got great performances from many players. John Tavares was a Hart candidate. Do you think they're going to be able to build on the success of last year's playoffs berth?
Yes, they do. I'm bullish on the Islanders. You know, I Tavares has turned the corner, and he is. I mean, we all knew he was a good, you know, an outstanding player, but you know, he's more than that now. He's got an aura about him. You know, he's got sort of a Taves vibe now. You know, where the players in the room like look to him, like when the situation turns on them, they'll look to John to step up. And, you know, he carries himself now and the way he interviews. There's something different about him. I have a hard time verbalizing it, but, you know, I feel it when I talk to him. And I think last year Capuano did a great job of instilling in them down the stretch what it takes to be successful and what it takes to be successful in big games. Like, I thought they were far more impressive than the Penguins. And I know they lost to the Penguins mm-hmm. in the first round, so mm-hmm. this is going to sound strange. But they were the more impressive team. Like, they played gritty. They looked dangerous to me. They looked like a team that was committed. The Penguins seem a little disinterested to me. So, you know, they weren't there yet in terms of their talent, but, you know, they're going to add some pieces this year, some younger players. Ryan Strom is coming in there, I mean, and their younger players that they did have, but... You know, Harmonic and McDonald, those are gritty, hard-nosed defensemen. I like this team, and I think Capuano is going to, you know, have them competitive and, you know, pushing toward the playoffs. And they're just a team that I don't think I'm going to want to play in the playoffs next season. I just think they learned a lot from last year's playoffs.
I totally agree, Kevin. And moving over to the Rangers, they made, you know, there's a bunch of moves, none of them really significant in terms of their roster. Of course, the biggest move behind the bench, John Tortorella out, Alain Vigneault in. What difference does that make?
Well, it makes a big difference to what we're going to see from them because, you know, they're going to go from an on-the-puck aggressive team to an offensive team. So it's going to be different. And, you know, I've created a little bit of a stir because in my predictions I have them out of the playoffs. And
wow.
You know, what everybody wants to know is why. I mean, you know, they have talent. They've got Nash. You know, they got Girardi. They got hopefully Staal coming back as well. They've got McDonough. But the reason why I didn't have them in the playoffs, first of all, is I believe that that whole Metropolitan, and I hate that name, like the rest of the world, division has. It's very confusing right now, and I think it's entirely possible that six teams could finish first. Or any one of those six could actually be out of the playoffs. I mean, it's very confusing in what's going to happen there. And I think with the Rangers, they're a real hard read now. I just don't know which way they're going to go. You know, are some players who, you know, like McDonough and Girardi, who really sort of blossomed under Tortorella and his intensity, you know, are they suddenly going to fall off now because when Vigneault won't push them as hard? I don't have an answer to that. Is Nash suddenly going to restore the roar because Vigneault is going to give him more freedom to explore his creative side? You know, I just don't know. I think they're a very difficult read. I don't know what direction they are. So for that reason, you know, I just said they were out of the playoffs, but really nothing would surprise me with the Rangers. There's still a lot of talent there, and the one thing that I haven't mentioned, which, you know, should have given me pause for not having him in the playoffs, is they have the league's best goalie.
Mm-hmm.
Lundqvist, I think, is still the best goalie. I just love how he plays. I think he gives your team a chance to win every night. So, you know, as soon as I said they weren't going to get in playoffs, I had regrets. But, you know, who knows? It's very wide open in that division.
Kevin, we haven't asked you about the Philly Flyers yet. They bought out Danny Briere. They bought out Ilya Bryzgalov. They brought in Mark Strait, and they brought in Vincent LeCavalier, who was bought out by the Tampa Bay Lightning. But it seemed like they didn't address their defensive deficiencies. They couldn't keep the puck out of their net last year and had trouble keeping their defense core healthy and consistent. Is there any reason to believe that they're going to be better this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really believe that. I believe that strongly. I think Mark Strait will help their defense both offensively and defensively for this reason. He's a puck possession guy. If he has the puck, the other team can't score. That's pretty good defense. And I learned that from Wayne Gretzky. And I think that they, I think that their puck possession is going to be so much better this season for that reason, and the fact Vinny LeCavier is totally re-energized there. I mean, let's look at this now. Vinny LeCavier is your number two center. You know, it seems like he's, you know, gone downhill in Tampa. But when you look at his numbers, they've been pretty good.
Yeah, they're not bad.
The problem is he just was making a lot of money. And it was just hard for them to deal with his, you know, salary cap hit. But, you know, I think he's re-energized. And if you're going to get 70 points or 75 points, and I think that's possible, out of your number two center, I think you're going to be pretty happy with that. And Hartnell obviously is healthy, and that, you know, that's going to make a difference as well. And, you know, Ray Emery had a good season last year. That, to me, that's the biggest question mark, is what's their goaltending going to be like. I'm not convinced that Mason's new address is going to turn him into an outstanding goalie. But I am intrigued by Emery. I saw a lot of the Blackhawks last year, and I saw a lot of Ray Emery. And, you know, if people want to believe that he was on a good team and that's why he had good numbers, well, that is true. But I watched him a lot, and he was very good. In fact, he was better than Crawford for a good part of the season. So I like the Flyers. I think they believe that their defense will stay healthy. They'll be better at keeping the puck out, and I think they think that Emery is going to help them a lot too.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question, and I bet you can predict what the question will be. Who do you have coming out of the East? Who do you have coming out of the West? And who's going to hoist Lord Stanley's mug sometime in June?
Well, I'm doing something I haven't done in a while, which is I have picked the Chicago Blackhawks to repeat, and I've done that because I think they're in the best position to repeat. You know, they're not going to worry about the hangover. They've gone through it before. You know, they've won 2 and 4, so winning back-to-back doesn't seem that hard. And nobody thought anybody was going to get 2 and 4 under the salary cap here. So that's why I took them. And in the East, you know, I've got the Penguins coming out. I don't feel nearly as good about that as I do about Chicago. I still like, you know, Boston quite a bit. And I also think this is so wide open that you know, many teams could emerge out of the East. But, you know, I do like Chicago. And in terms of the playoff teams, you know, I'm going within the Atlantic. I'm going with the Boston, Detroit, Toronto, and Montreal. I think it's going to be 4 and 4. I don't think it'll be 5 and 3 like a lot of people do. And then, boy, I'm struggling a little bit in the Metro. But I guess I'm going with Pittsburgh, Washington, I got the Islanders fourth, and I got Philly sneaking in there. So, but nothing would surprise me in the Metro. And the same thing I say in the West, in the far West too, where, you know, who knows what's going to happen there.
The fun gets underway on Tuesday evening. Kevin Allen from USA Today, thanks as always for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Call me anytime.
Take care, Kevin. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Couple minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Still to come, Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail will join us to talk about the Western Conference preview. Great insight, as always, from Kevin Allen of USA Today about the East. You know, he says he's high on the Philadelphia Flyers. He has the Washington Capitals making the playoffs. I'm a little surprised he doesn't have Ottawa in there. He has Montreal over Ottawa. That, to me, surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm surprised a little bit by that too, Drew. I mean, Montreal's got talent. There's no question about that. I mean, but so does Ottawa. It's tough because I like Toronto this year. We'll get to our predictions later, but I do like Toronto this year, and I'll explain why. And later on in the show, I will. But Detroit and Boston are solidified at the top there. And that's why this new format, guys, is so interesting. It's going to be far more exciting than the old format because you have that same stupid point system, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. But and now you have all these spots up for grabs that you can cross over, and you're going to have these rivalries now in the playoffs. I mean, there's nothing aside. The only discrepancy, the only issue with this new format is that there's seven teams in these divisions and there's eight teams in the other divisions.
Right, so, but remember when the realignment came out, Richie, and I agree with you. I think, like, how amazing is it that this year we're talking about the realignment and who's going to make the playoffs as opposed to the potential lockout, right? Like, we're just back to, like, talking about good old hockey, right? And the chances of making the playoffs are better in the West, but there's still two wild cards. And I think that's great. They got that right, and I think people were worried that that wasn't going to work out, but I think it is. There had to be a conference with 16 teams in it, right? It couldn't be 15 and 15. So that's how it worked out. But I agree with Kevin on all of them except I like...
Don't give all your predictions away.
Yeah, don't talk about it yet.
Okay, okay.
Hold your fire, Ezzy. When we come back, we're going to look at the Atlantic Division and the Metropolitan Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Season Preview Spectacular on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Speaking of welcoming back, we're thrilled to welcome back as an official sponsor Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. Get your own custom-fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Atlantic Division, the Metropolitan Division, two new division names, neither of them make any damn sense, but that's the NHL for you in a nutshell. Let's start in the Atlantic Division. We'll start with the team that had the most points last season when you combine the two divisions, and that was the Montreal Canadiens. Their additions this year, Danny Briere, George Parros, and Douglas Murray. Their big key losses, really Michael Ryder, Thomas Caberle, you can say a little bit, but not really. It's more or less the same team that they were last year, yet people don't have as high expectations for them. Is that just because they're not going to surprise teams as much as they did last season?
Last year I had them as a surprise team, Drew. So, I mean, I was wrong, certainly wrong about Chicago. I'm not surprised. I'm actually surprised you haven't mentioned that yet. But Montreal was a team I thought would surprise. And you look at their team, they have a lot of talent. I don't think there's any question about that. Skill, they lack size. I thought they got a tremendous year, obviously, from Subban, Winston, Norris. Markov stayed relatively healthy. The issue of Emelin's injury, and you pointed out last year, Drew, how significant that was. Price coming into an Olympic year. All in all, to me, Therrien lost his composure in the playoffs. The team lost their composure. That team was a joke in the playoffs. They completely threw in the towel. Their performance was abhorrent. And I think that if you're looking at the team this year, there's a lot of pressure. Combine pressure with the new format of the playoffs, and you have Detroit and Chicago, and Detroit and Boston, I think, are the top two teams in that division. So you have Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Florida. Florida's not going to be in there. Tampa Bay and Buffalo. I don't think Buffalo's that good either. But so you have basically four teams fighting for two spots, and then never mind the crossover. My worry about Montreal is, can they handle expectations? Because when expectations got high at the end of last year, they crumbled. Now, I think Briere is an upgrade over Ryder, but I don't think this team is going to make the playoffs, in my opinion. The skills there, they're going to get good power play numbers. They're going to be good in certain areas, but I just don't think this team will be able to handle what comes with it. Although I do think Galchenyuk could be a huge, huge piece here because he's going to be better than he was last year, and he's a really talented player.
Richie, you mentioned the first-round playoff exit, and I think that's probably why some people, I should say, have Montreal not making the playoffs. Obviously, you're one of those people. And a lot of that has to do with the way they lost and the way Carey Price played compared to the way he played for most of last season. Now, I'm a staunch defender of Carey Price. I think he is a top 10 goalie at times. He's a top 5 goalie in the NHL, and he can steal games. He has that game-stealing ability. But towards the end of last season, he just lost it, and he wasn't playing well. And it was a sign of things to come towards the end of the regular season when I remember talking about this on the show, about is he going to be able to turn it around? I thought he would, and he didn't play well. Not that different than Marc-Andre Fleury, who really struggled in the playoffs last year, you know, including the first round when they beat the Islanders, but it took them 7 games. But I still think that they're good enough offensively to compete at this high level. And I think, you know, Montreal
was six games.
Six
games or seven?
It was six games.
Six games. Okay.
Sorry, six games. But it was a situation last year where, as you said, there weren't the expectations for them to be, you know, one of the top teams in the East. And last year, everything seemed to come together. PK Subban, even though he held out at the beginning of the season, he ended up giving a Norris trophy winning season. And the power play was amazing. And everybody was scoring. And Lars Eller had a breakout year. Brendan Gallagher, who wasn't even supposed to make the team, was a Calder Trophy candidate. And Galchenyuk was amazing. But in the playoffs, it seemed to just all fall apart. And I still think this team's going to score a lot of goals. Max Pacioretty's looked great in the offseason. And Plekanec is still good. And I still think they're going to get lots of goals. Gionta's going to be healthy this year. He's had tons of health issues. He's getting older. But to me, it's down the stretch. They're still a small team. They've brought in Briere, and he'll play on the second line with Lars Eller, most likely on the right wing there. He probably won't play center. They're so small down the middle. Galchenyuk's a little bit bigger, but Desharnais, Plekanec, Eller's a bigger guy. But they're still a small team, and you know, so they've brought in Perros and Doug Murray to replace Emelin.
That's
fine. It'll make them a little bit tougher. But still, as a group, I don't think they're really difficult to play against. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to be a bottom seed in the Eastern Conference, but I still do think they're going to make the playoffs just because they're still really strong, and you've got Subban and Markov on the back end, and they've got the great power play. So I still think they're going to get in there.
The Boston Bruins finished last season a point behind the Montreal Canadiens. They made some changes this offseason, primarily trading Tyler Seguin, trading Rich Peverly to the Dallas Stars. They got Louis Erickson. They got Joe Morrow. They lost Andrew Ferentz in free agency. They lost Nathan Horton in free agency. They lost Jaromir Jagr, even though he was a bit of a bust in the playoffs for them. Yeah. They did sign Jerome Iginla. You know, what's the most enviable aspect of the Boston Bruins? Their depth at right wing, left wing, center, or defense?
They're great. I mean, the problem, you know, this is the issue. Iginla, I think, replaces Horton for this year. I mean, obviously, long-term, Iginla's older. I think Erickson's better than Sagan right now, especially at playing the wing, because Sagan's a natural center. So I think you've actually probably gotten a tad better up front. You're going to get Campbell back. You're strong up the middle. Bergeron's now healthy. You have speed. You have size. The back end, you lose Ferentz, but you have Krug, who can move the puck really well. Hamilton's going to, you think, come into his own. He can move the puck. Charak move the puck. Boychuk's underrated. It's a good team. I think it's one of the best teams. I actually, later on, I'll talk about it, but I have this team going a long way, because I think the story at the end of the year is going to be Jerome Iginla not having a cup. And I think it's always important for teams that are hungry but have been there before to have guys who haven't or haven't won before.
Richie, the Bruins almost won the cup last year, of course. And top to bottom, they're the deepest team in the league. I think there's only a few teams in the conversation, quite frankly. But I actually think that they're the deepest team in the league. And we've seen them play the Jets back-to-back nights. They beat the Jets twice, once in overtime, and they whipped them 5-0 yesterday. But, I mean, you know, they're just so solid. Good in goal. Deep on defense. Losing Andrew Ferentz is fine, but Adam McQuaid's been there for several years, so he moves up. Dougie Hamilton is just going to get better and better. Richie mentioned Torrey Krug. He's going to help the power play. The only downside to their season last year was they had the 26th-ranked power play. Their power play wasn't very good. If you've seen them in the preseason, which we have a little bit, they've been using Zdeno Chara in front of the net. They're going to try to do that a little bit more. But this is the deepest team in the NHL and by far the best team in this division. And I think the only question is, how far are they going to go? Are they going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, win the Cup? Because I'll be surprised if they aren't at least in the Final Four.
Toronto Maple Leafs had a very active offseason. We mentioned it when we were just talking to Kevin Allen. They acquired Jonathan Bernier from the Los Angeles Kings, Dave Bolin from the Chicago Blackhawks, David Clarkson from the New Jersey Devils, or he was a free agent signing. Their losses, really, you know, Mikhail Grabowski, they bought him out. Ben Scrivens and Matt Fratton go to Los Angeles. Komisarek and Clark MacArthur and Mike Koska are the only regulars that are really off of this team now. Richie, you're high on the Leafs. Why don't you say why you like them?
Because they have a great coach who gets his team to buy in immediately. They were great in the power play and penalty kill last year, something that they were awful with Ron Wilson consistently. Dave Bolin is a guy you can play in second line center, you can play him a third line center, you can play him a fourth line center. He can do everything you need him to do. He's not spectacular, but he's very good. Clarkson, I know he's got suspension. I think that actually will galvanize the team for the long haul. He can hit, he can skate, he can do a lot of things. As you know, he's overpaid, but as a whole, this team, I like the mix. Speed, a ton of speed, skill, lots of skill, and they got some toughness now. Look at their back end. I don't love it, but they can move the puck. Franzl can move the puck. Gardner can move the puck. Phaneuf can move the puck. Gunnarsson. These guys can move the puck. You got goaltending. You add in Reimer and Bernier. Let them battle it out because they're both talented guys. With good coaching, a nice aged mix on that squad, youth and veterans. Great coaching, as I mentioned a couple times now, but it can't be overstated based on the huge change you saw last year. I think they're on the up and up. I like what Dave Nonis has done. I think this is a playoff team.
I think the Leafs last year surprised a lot of people, and this year people are expecting them to make the playoffs. And I can't disagree, quite frankly, with what Richie said. I don't have them making the playoffs because I think their division is extremely difficult. And I think they're going to have to night in and night out beat the Ottawa Senators. They're going to have to beat the Detroit Red Wings. They're going to have to beat the Boston Bruins. So if they do make the playoffs, I think they're finishing third or fourth highest in this division. And, you know, David Clarkson played last night, even though he's suspended for 10 games. But that's huge. He's going to lose, you know, $500,000 in salary for that 10-game suspension. I'm joking, but it's like $200,000. But, you know, they've brought everyone back. You know, Kadri was holding out a little bit, but they've improved the competition in net. They're strong in net. I think their weakness is on defense, but as Richie mentioned, it's a pretty mobile group. You know, Cody Franzen is under contract now. Paul Ranger is probably the greatest story in the NHL this year, a guy that decided to not play NHL hockey for 3 years, and now it looks like he's going to make the top six. John Michael Lyles is probably going to be the odd man out. But it's a strong team. I have them finishing just out of the playoffs, just for the fact that this is probably the strongest division.
Ottawa Senators, a big acquisition in the offseason was via trade. They got Bobby Ryan from the Anaheim Ducks. They also signed Clark MacArthur and Joe Corvo. Subtracted from the lineup, Jacob Silverberg, he went to Anaheim in that trade. Gonchar goes to Dallas. Daniel Alfredson, we've heard enough about that to last us a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Two questions regarding the Ottawa Senators. When healthy, is the Mihalik, Spezza, Bobby Ryan line the best line in hockey? And secondly, do the Senators' hopes for a long playoff run rely on secondary scoring?
First question, Drew, I think arguably, you know, you have your Vancouver Sedins, and if they play with Burrows and Getzlaff and Perry playing together, and if Zetterberg and Datsyuk are playing together, but that line could very well be the best line in hockey. It's going to be great on the power play. Those guys can do everything, really. Their secondary scoring is going to be a factor. I don't love Turris. He's fine, but I don't love him. His contract's such that he doesn't need to be great. Konecker can add some offense in. MacArthur, I don't love him either. But it's other guys. I like Smith. I like Greening. Peugeot has been a great story. Zibanejad can come into his own. The secondary scoring is a factor, Drew, when we get down later on, I think. But when you talk about what this team has, a top line and really good defense, Carlson, Mathot, Cowan, Weirkoch, who people like a lot, can move the puck, and then Phillips and Corvo as their steady veterans, and Anderson and Leonard. So you've got depth in net. You have a tremendous coach in Paul MacLean. You're going to have a good power play with all those weapons. And you're going to be able to score enough, I think, to make it to the playoffs. When you're talking about those secondary scoring lines, maybe down the road when you're playing in your own division, trying to get to the Eastern Conference Final through Detroit or Boston, that may be a factor when those teams are throwing up better third and fourth, second line guys than you are. But on a day-to-day basis during the course of the season, I have confidence in this group, and I think it's a playoff team.
Absolutely. They were first in the league in power play, first in the league in penalty kill last year, second best defensive team in the NHL, and they've gone out and they've acquired Bobby Ryan and Clark MacArthur. Joe Corvo is a sixth defenseman. He'll be a seventh defenseman at times, yeah. But they've just gotten better. And to me, the secondary scoring, I really like Corey Konecker, a big fan of his. I really like that trade last year for Ben Bishop to Tampa Bay. To me, one of the biggest concerns for me is Mahalik's health. He's had so many different issues over the years. He wasn't healthy all of last year. To me, that's a huge factor. And, you know, Mika Zibanejad's going to get his first full season. I really like Colin Greening. I think he had a breakthrough year and was good in the playoffs. Pajot, we know, came in. He'll be most likely on the fourth line. He might spend some time on the third line. But they've got the toughness with Chris Neal. They've got so much talent there on the back end. Mathot and Carlson are one of the best of D pairings. And as Richie mentioned, the goaltending is second to none. So I think this team is a big-time contender. I think I've probably got them second in the division.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. When we come back, we continue our season preview with the Atlantic Division and then move over to the Metropolitan Division exclusively here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Season preview spectacular. This segment is brought to you by our friends at the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers.
True. I know you want to continue to break down the Atlantic Division here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the big season preview show. But, you know, our listeners want to know, are you going to Nuit Blanche tonight? Because Remus is going.
Well, we know Remus is going.
Remus has to go.
Remus has to go.
Are you going?
Remus's girlfriend asked him to go.
Am I going? I'm not sure. We have plans. We're going to the Exchange District for a little while. Then we're going out for a nice dinner. We'll see if
where's dinner tonight.
Don't want to bring it up on air. It's private. I don't want our adoring fans, you know, disturbing Laura and my fancy dinner. But you know, we'll see if we make it to Nuit Blanche. That would be a late night for me. You know, I am 85 years old.
Will you guys be doing dinner on the river again this year?
We'll see if they happen. If that happens, we'll see. Maybe actually, what we're going to do is we're going to build a barge and we're just going to float down the river and have a private dinner before it actually freezes. That'll be a little bit later on.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on with the Detroit Red Wings, their two big additions this offseason, Daniel Alfredsson on the right wing, Stephen Weiss up the middle at center. They lost Valtteri Filppula. They lost Carlo Koliakovo. They lost Damian Brunner. You know, how good are the Detroit Red Wings entering this season?
Well, pretty good. Took Chicago to 7 games. They're up 3-1 in the series. They have a defense like Cronwell, Erickson, Kindle, Quincy. All those guys can skate. All those guys can move the puck. Howard's solid goaltender. Really come around on him. Once they get Helm back, it's going to add to their speed and depth up the middle. Weiss is to me, an upgrade on Filppula. And then Alfredsson isn't what he once was, but he allows you to have depth on the power play. He can play the point, and he gives you depth on the second line, which you didn't have before. You don't need to rely on health of Samuelson, as Kevin Allen mentioned, and the health of Bertuzzi and those guys. You bring Cleary back into the mix. Gustav Nyquist is a really nifty player. To me, this is probably the second best team or third best team in the Eastern Conference. They have a great coach. They have an amazing general manager. There's nothing not to like about this squad this year. They can really do it all.
They decided not to bring back Valtteri Filppula because he was asking for too much money, so he went to Tampa Bay. They decided not to give Damian Brunner his money, so mm-hmm. he went to New Jersey, and he stayed as a free agent for a long time, which I think, by the way, shows you that Kenny Holland probably wasn't wrong about him. But you have two of the most dynamic forwards in the league in Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk. They're so good. If you watch some of the preseason games, they look just as good as they were in the playoffs last year. They seem to have not lost a step. Stephen Weiss had all those injury problems last year. I forget how many games he ended up playing, but he didn't play very many games. And they've still got the depth. And there's no reason to believe why that they wouldn't be a playoff team this year. And as you mentioned, Richie, they took the eventual Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks to the edge of elimination, really, mm-hmm. and they easily could have knocked them off. So I have them as probably the wild card in one of the wild card spots because there's two wild cards in the Eastern Conference. So I'm probably predicting them to be fourth in this division, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were third, even second. But I just think that, you know, Ottawa's better all around in goal and on defense. But you look at a guy like Danny DeKeyser, who Andy Murray was coaching him in Western Michigan. He's emerged as a steal on defense, and you know, Kindle's gotten better. Erickson's, you know, developed, and they're really not hurting that bad now that, you know, the Nicholas Lidstrom years are long gone. So I still think they're a very strong team and a team to be reckoned with.
The Buffalo Sabres added Jamie McBain from the Carolina Hurricanes. They brought back Henrik Talander. He obviously used to play with them. He played last season in New Jersey. They lost Andre Sequeira. He went to Carolina. Nathan Gerby, Adam Parties in Winnipeg. Jochen Hecht finally retired. Questions I have about the Buffalo Sabres, two of them. One, what's there to be excited about on this team? And number two, will Ryan Miller finish the year in Buffalo?
Yeah, likely not, because he's a pending unrestricted free agent.
So is Vanek.
Yeah, you know, if I look at the team, Drew, I say, okay, Vanek, Hodgson, Lino, Tyler Ennis, Grigorenko, Stav. I mean, they have guys who can score. They have Ott who can mix it up. Their defense isn't any good. That's a problem. They brought back Talander to Henrik Talander to play with Myers. Maybe that'll help. But Erhoff can't defend. McBain isn't a great defender. He can move the puck, but he's not a great defender. Mike Weber, Mark Pitsick on the back. They don't have a great defense. If Miller steals a few games for them, that'll help. They can score a bit. But their offense isn't good enough to make up for their defense. And their goaltending is good, but hasn't been that good lately. So overall, I don't see it. I don't see a team right now that scares anybody, and I see them out of the playoffs.
Yeah, the only thing to get excited about right now is the future. There's two teams that are clearly not going to do that well this year and that are in the middle of a rebuild. The Calgary Flames in the West and the Buffalo Sabres in the East, and those teams will both be towards the bottom because they've decided to trade away or not re-sign their best players. So whether you're talking about Pominville or Derek Roy, I mean, those guys were their top players, and they've decided to go with the youth. Now, we're told that Rasmus Ristolainen is probably going to make the opening day lineup. He was drafted in New Jersey. We were there. They're very high on him. A guy like Mikhail Gregorenko was drafted in 2012, but then was sent back to the QMJHL. He's going to be on the team. They're going to have a very young team this year, but they're going to struggle to score goals. They're going to struggle to keep the puck out of the net, and they're in this really difficult division. So I think the future looks really good. A couple of years from now, I think they're going to be able to rebound because they're going to have all this talent. Richie mentioned Mark Pisick. He's a young defenseman, and Ennis is still young. Marcus Foligno. A couple of years down the road, they're going to be good, but this year is not the year.
Tampa Bay Lightning brought in Valtteri Filppula from the Detroit Red Wings. They lost Vinny LeCavalier. Those are the two big additions and subtractions this year in Tampa. Questions I have regarding the Tampa Bay Lightning. Number one, is Ben Bishop finally the answer to the Lightning goalie woes? Question two, can Filppula be a reasonable facsimile of Vincent LeCavalier's production? And question three, is the defense still too weak to make the Lightning a legitimate threat?
I don't remember question one, Richie.
So. Yeah, first question, Bishop. I don't know, Drew. Lindback, they thought, was the answer before. Bishop's a big guy. Obviously, it's 6'7". Him and Lindback are big boys there to try and play. I don't know. I mean, based on the way they evaluated last year, I'm not going to bet on Bishop being that guy. On D, that was the third question, but I'll address that now, Drew. I mean, they have some names here, but Brewer isn't, you know, he's fine at stuff, but he's not amazing. Hedman hasn't taken the step I think they wanted him to. Matt Carl doesn't defend well enough. Sammy Salo is solid, but doesn't, you know, he's older now. He doesn't skate as well. Keith Ollie and Gudas in the back end, well, you know, those are your depth players, and they're playing the 5-6 role. But my biggest issue with Tampa Bay, and Filppula can provide offense, I don't think as well as LeCavalier, but I think he can provide it, and LeCavalier will score more, and he's bigger. Filppula will move around better. The Lightning don't have, you know, and Drouin's going to help here, but the Lightning don't have third and fourth line depth, I think, good enough to compete with some of these loaded teams. They just don't have enough offensive, they don't have enough forwards on this squad that are NHL caliber, as far as I'm concerned, and they're working too many of these guys in. I mean, they're going to rely on Brett Connolly to be better, And to take a next step. Drouin, who knows what happens? Is he going to play the middle? Is he going to play the wing? But there's if Ryan Malone gets injured, which happens almost all the time, there's just not enough depth, I don't think, on this roster. And that's why I have Tampa Bay out of the playoffs with the questions on in goal, questions on defense, and questions up front. Too many questions. So almost more than you asked.
So what you're saying is the presence of Richard Panik makes you panic?
Oh, well done, Drew.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to most likely be that third line with Palat and Tyler Johnson, Richard Panik. And these guys are young. You know, we forget that John Cooper was, an AHL coach, and he's brought some of the guys from the AHL to play in Tampa. But these are guys that are mainly unproven. And, you know, whether it's Malone or Alexander Killorn or Drouin even that play with Stamkos in St. Louis, that's going to be one of the highest scoring lines. I mean, you've got the two top scorers in the NHL last year right there, and they're going to score goals, and they're going to be difficult to play against, and they have a pretty good power play. But Ben Bishop is unproven as a number one goaltender. I think he's good. But again, I thought Anders Lindback was going to be better than he was last year, and you know, you never know with a guy who has never played a full year in the NHL, right? He's only played in a backup role previously. And the defense, I have to agree with Richie. I mean, I like Keith Ole. He's a young player. And, you know, Victor Hedman is also still young. But he hasn't really emerged as a shutdown defender. No. Right now, he's still kind
makes
of learning
mistakes, yeah.
learning the defensive side of the game for a high draft pick. So I still think, and I mean, Filppula didn't really love that signing. I really like Teddy Purcell, but I don't think they're good enough defensively to make them a playoff team this year, and I probably have them finishing fifth in this division.
The final team in the Atlantic Division is the Florida Panthers. Just simply too soon for the Panthers, but their arrow is pointing up?
Yeah, too soon for the Panthers, and the arrow is pointing up, Drew. That's fair. Tim Thomas might actually perform and steal some games for them. I think they'd probably be better off dealing him then and trying to trade him to a team like an Islanders team who he was with last year who might maybe need better goaltending down the road. But a lot of talent in the system, but not this year. You look at that roster, certainly not this year.
If the Panthers are going to be bad this year, why bring in Tim Thomas?
It's a fair question.
Like, why not go with Markstrom? They were going to go with Markstrom and Clemenson, and then they go out and sign Tim Thomas.
I used to kind of think that way, but I know that not having secure goaltending is just sometimes adversely affects the confidence of young players and doesn't make them as adventurous, doesn't make them as willing to try different things offensively. I think having a goalie and a veteran goalie calms them down a bit. So I think it's not the worst thing.
Even if it increases their standing a little bit.
Yeah, but it won't increase it that much.
Okay.
I mean, they're pretty bad.
Let's leave the Atlantic Division there. When we come back, we'll do the Metropolitan Division. And then at the end of the next segment, we'll talk about our playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.